Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. I'm Jamie Floyd, sitting in for Brian Lehrer this morning. And when it comes to New Year's resolutions, as you've just heard, many of us make a plan to cut back on sweets. We stop drinking so much soda. We skip dessert. But as far as any diets go, everything is in moderation, right? Well, what if it turns out that there is no safe level of sugar consumption? What if sugar is as toxic to public health as, say, tobacco? Well, joining me now is investigative science and health journalist Gary Taubes. He's the co-founder and senior scientific advisor of the Nutrition Science Initiative. And he has a new book. It's called The Case Against Sugar. It explores the connection between sugar and the litany of epidemics that plague modern society. Gary, welcome back to WNYC.
Well, thank you.
And you heard that last caller. She said she dumped sugar and it changed her life. That was an amazing moment, just as you were walking into the studio.
Yeah, that kind of made my day.
And I'm sure it made her go out and buy the book if she hasn't already. You really see sugar as a drug, like nicotine. Is it actually addictive?
Well, the research doesn't actually tell us whether. One of the points I make in this book is that until the last 10 years or so in the awareness of the obesity epidemic, to go after sugar or study its possible deleterious health effects was considered kind of akin to quackery. So there's precious little good science on whether or not sugar's addictive. Mm. On the other hand, I have the journalist historian Charles Mann, who's also a friend of mine. He's a wonderful writer. He put it this way in his book, 1493, and I think he pretty much said everything that had to be said. He said, scientists debate amongst themselves whether sugar is an addictive substance or people just act like it is.
Well, what about toxicity? Is it toxic?
Well, toxicity is a different question, and here is the issue that I'm really wrestling with in my book. Mm-hmm. So we have these epidemics of obesity and diabetes that are worldwide. Take any population, when it transitions to a Western diet and lifestyle, eventually undergoes these epidemics.
Right.
And the question is, what's triggering them? And the conventional wisdom is we eat too much and we're sedentary. Basically, all these delicious foods come around and we can't stop eating, and then we don't do manual labor anymore. And the arguments in all of my books is that that's a very naive way of thinking about obesity and diabetes. And if you take a biological perspective, then you get the prime suspect becomes sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And just like a crime, if you have the same crime committed everywhere, same unique characteristics of the crime, you're probably going to blame the same suspect until you have to go for multiple suspects.
Right. But in your book, when you talk about sugar, you do make distinctions between refined sugar and high fructose corn syrup, for example, and it really gets pretty technical. Can you explain the differences between terms like glucose, sucrose, fructose? Or, for example, or I guess what I'm trying to ask is whether all sugars are equally toxic, if any sugar is toxic.
Well, this is one of the problems with the debate for the last century. One of the reasons the scientific community did such a bad job of getting this straight is researchers and clinicians who were incredibly influential had no real idea what they were talking about when they talked about sugar. Like, they didn't have basic biochemistry. So when I talk about sugar, when we use sugar in the terms of the white stuff we put in our coffee or sprinkle on our cereal, that's sucrose. And sucrose is a molecule of a simpler carbohydrate named glucose bonded to fructose. Okay, fructose is what makes sugars sweet. Fructose is the sweetest of all the sugars. If we're talking about high fructose corn syrup, that's a 55-45 mixture of fructose and glucose also. So from all the research that I've seen, it appears our bodies appear to metabolize the two almost identically.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about starches and grains, white flour, those break down into glucose alone. So there's been a story when I wrote about this for the New York Times Sunday Magazine six years ago. The question was, is this fructose part of the sugar molecule the problem?
Mm-hmm.
Because we metabolize, the glucose goes into our bloodstream, and virtually every cell in our body uses it for fuel. The fructose goes to our liver. And when we're drinking sodas, in which half the calories are from fructose, and we digest it quickly, the idea is it basically gets dumped on your liver, and your liver didn't evolve to handle that.
And there's no other food value at all in
then
something
no
like a soda.
Well, this is, yeah, no other. But again, the question is, if it's got vitamin C attached and it's orange juice, is it really any better?
Right, right.
And traditionally, we've always thought it was. If it's got vitamins and minerals, it's good for you. That's why we allow our kids to drink chocolate milk. You dump in sugar, you give it chocolate flavoring, and they're getting the calcium from the milk. This argument is, as soon as you dump in sugar, you've made it something they should not consume.
You know, I hadn't planned to take calls, but I'm seeing them come in, so I'm going to take a couple of them in just a moment. But I do want to ask one quick question that's critical in the book, and that's about metabolic syndrome. Because you write that before, and I'm quoting now, before we get either heart disease or diabetes, we first manifest something called metabolic syndrome. So can you explain for our listeners what metabolic syndrome is? I hadn't heard of that. I certainly know what diabetes is and heart disease. But what is metabolic syndrome, and what's the connection with sugar consumption?
Okay, so this is, it almost boggles my mind. It's almost incomprehensible to me that people don't know what this is, even though I understand how it happened. So from the 1960s onward, we became obsessed with this idea that high cholesterol causes heart disease. Again, incredibly simplistic, naive concept, but we focused on it, the journalism focused on it, we created entire national organizations to get people to lower their cholesterol. Mm-hmm. From the 1960s onward, the science evolved. So a lot of researchers are studying the precursors to heart disease, and it turns out that the precursors to heart disease are very similar to the precursors to diabetes, and they're strongly associated with obesity. Mm-hmm. So what you end up with by the 1990s is this concept called insulin resistance or metabolic syndrome. And metabolic syndrome is a cluster of metabolic abnormalities that associate with obesity and diabetes. So your HDL cholesterol is low. HDL is known as the good cholesterol.
Right.
Your waist size is getting bigger. That's the first thing your doctor's telling you is supposed to look for to diagnose it, which means you're getting fatter.
Correct.
Your triglycerides, another measurement of blood fats, are elevated. You're not handling glucose well. You're called glucose intolerant, which is a kind of pre-diabetes. So once you have this metabolic syndrome, and the CDC, the latest estimate is that 75 million American adults have metabolic syndrome.
Wow.
And if you get heart disease, that's going to be the reason why. If you have a heart attack, that's probably going to be the reason why. And you're on your way to being diabetic, and you're already probably on your way or obese. So again, one of the things I've tried to do in all my books is to point out that clearly metabolic syndrome is the problem. And this obsessive focus we had on cholesterol was one of the many blind alleys mm-hmm. that happened to happen all the time in science.
Sort of a red herring.
A red herring, but without the huge stakes of other scientific, I mean, with huge stakes in this case.
All right, let's take a call from John. He's in Stamford, Connecticut. It seems to be a rather provocative question that he has. John, you're on with Gary Taubes. He's the author of many books. The latest is The Case Against Sugar. He also wrote Why We Get Fat. A lot of people wrote that book. What's your question for Gary Taubes?
Yes, good morning. So my question is, and Gary, you know, I'm just wondering, is this the crisis du jour now? We see the medical literature comes out every couple of days. Some new crisis is out there. We need to be careful. Now, your book is basically saying sugar is completely bad. And I'm just wondering, where's the moderation?
Well,
I do understand that you do have situations where the people that are processing foods are adding sugar to things like salad dressing and tomato sauce and things like that. And I agree that may not be the place where you want it, but to completely damn sugar, it's been around since 1099 AD when it was brought into England, over almost 1,000 years that we've lived with it. Now, why is it like so bad?
Okay, so you've got two questions in there. The first one is it the crisis du jour? And the second one is this issue of moderation. So let me address the first one, which is, by the way, my entry into public health, investigative public health reporting was in effect to explore this phenomena, the crisis du jour, and why that comes out of the what I consider the substandard nutrition and epidemiologic research we're living with today. But again, the issue is you've got these epidemics. We have In October, the Director General of the World Health Organization called the obesity and diabetes epidemics a slow-motion disaster. Mm-hmm. And she said there was she predicted there was virtually zero chance that they would prevent a bad situation from getting worse. So what we want to, desperately important for us to explain the cause of these epidemics. Whether it's the crisis du jour or not, these obesity and diabetes are going to overwhelm our healthcare system with their costs. And the estimate is at least $1 billion a day, the cost of obesity and diabetes. We have to explain it. So it just gets back to this question, what's causing it? Even if last week we said it was fat and this week we said it was sugar, something is triggering these epidemics in every population. And we have to deal with it. And what I'm arguing is the prime suspect is sugar. It's always been sugar. Yes, sugar has been around for thousands of years. As you put it, came into England roughly 1,000 years ago. But we had a slow build of sugar consumption back in the early years of the 19th century, we were eating maybe 4 or 5 pounds of sugar per capita a year. By 1999, the food industry in the United States was making 153 pounds available for every single person in the country. So the issue is not that sugar is inherently toxic, as toxicologists will tell you, the dose is everything. But we got to a point where the dose is overwhelming our bodies, and if I'm right, we see toxic effects. Now, the issue of moderation, I don't know how to define it. People say, define moderation. A lean person says, moderation is what I'm doing. And if everyone did it, they would be lean too, and that's simply not true. The world is full of obese and diabetic individuals who know enough not to eat sugar now and yet are still obese and diabetic. So, I have the advantage or disadvantage of being an ex-smoker. And as an ex-smoker, nobody would have ever told me smoke in moderation. You know, they knew that if I had one or two cigarettes, I was going to be back to wrestling with this habit every day of my life. And so the last chapter of my book is called How Much is Still Too Much? And it's sort of an examination of this issue of moderation, whether it's meaningful. And even if it's meaningful for some people, that doesn't mean it's meaningful for all of us.
Right. The last chapter of your book goes directly to John's question of moderation.
Right.
Let's take a call from Janet in Brooklyn, which is slightly off point, but I am sure on the minds of a lot of our listeners. Janet, you're on with Gary Taubes.
Good morning. I like to use stevia. What do you think about that? Thank you.
The sugar substitute, stevia, Equal. It goes all the way back to the old saccharin that we used to use.
Saccharin and cyclamates.
People love a sugar taste. Is it safe or advised that they use these substitutes?
I think so. Again, the research to tell us one way or the other is simply non-existent. There's a lot of suggestive evidence, suggestive studies that I don't think are even done really well enough to be interpretable. I can't imagine they are worse than sugar. So the question you have to ask yourself is what the Philip Handler, who was president of the National Academy of Sciences in the 1970s, said. He said, you've got to ask yourself, is it better or worse to eat the amount of artificial sweetener I'm going to consume or the equivalent amount of sugar I would consume?
Or can I get by with neither?
And ideally, neither would be best. Yeah. So I think a lot of people they're not prepared to give up sugar, their sweet tooth, and so they need the artificial sweetening, and it could be used as a crutch to eventually get to the point that I think, you know, I find much easier to maintain, which is neither.
It is difficult, though. We just did our segment on New Year's resolutions. People called in to talk about how difficult they find it to shop for a gluten-free diet, to shop for a wheat-free diet, and it is difficult to shop for a sugar-free diet. I mean, you can obviously cut out sugar on your table. Don't put sugar on your cereal. But there's sugar in everything.
There is sugar.
How do you do it, Gary Taubes?
Well, first of all, I have the advantage of living in the sort of Berkeley, Oakland area.
So yes,
everybody's avoiding something out there. if you'll notice, virtually every successful diet book, whether it's very low fat, low carb, gluten-free, sugar-free, you know, pick it, pescatorian. They're going to end up telling you to shop on the outside aisles of the supermarket. So basically what they're all doing is saying avoid processed foods. And it's one of the problems when we do research studies as well, because if I tell a research subject to avoid sugar, they're going to avoid gluten, avoid, you know, refined grain, avoid trans fats, because the foods that have sugar in them have all the rest. So you end up, the easiest thing to do is shop on the outside aisles, but now you have to prepare the meals yourself. And I realize that many people simply don't have the time and the resources to do that. So ideally, we'll get the science right. That's mm-hmm. I've been driving for this in every one of my books. And if we had the science right, processed foods could be prepared that are much healthier. They can now already, but it's kind of a, you know, a bathtub approach to throwing out everything that might be bad and then usually have tasteless food.
Are you encouraged by reports that the soda companies are seeing continual drops in at least soda consumption, sales of sugary drinks plummeting? Is that an overall change in Americans' dietary tastes and habits?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the sugary beverage industry and the food industry sees the writing on the wall, and the sugar industry sees the writing on the wall. They know where this is going. Whether or not their food is being damned unjustifiably, they know where it's going, and they know Americans are trying to get off sugar, at least, you know, to some extent. I think they'll try to delay it as long as possible because they have a profit margin they'd like to hit.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think there's a lot of I've been arguing that the nutrition science in has been so poorly carried out over the past 50 years that it allows people to make every argument, any argument they want. And it creates an environment in which there are dozens of people just like me, and we're each arguing a different thing, and some of us are saying meat is bad, and some are saying wheat is bad, and some are saying sugar is bad, and mm-hmm. you name it, you'll find someone who's got a book saying it's bad. And until we really, I think, fix the science so that we know what's healthy and what's not, we're going to have problems.
So how do we fix the science? Obviously, you've written this book, so that's step one, but how do you get to step two and five, and ultimately proof, documentation, scientific evidence that sugar is, as you say in the book, the culprit?
Well, again, there are ways to do clinical research correctly that has been, again, it's very hard to do in nutrition because mm-hmm. we're dealing with people and we're dealing with chronic diseases that develop over years and decades.
Right, so, right. And you're essentially trying to track backwards.
Yeah, you're trying to cut. You have to cut corners. No study is definitive. The fundamental problem is we've had this belief that people just get fat because they eat too much. Mm-hmm. It blames behavior. Eating too much and sedentary behavior are both behaviors. And this is our absolute bedrock dogma. You go to the National Institutes of Health website, this is what it tells you. They don't think it through, but because of this notion that obesity is a calories in, calories out problem, it's just a physics and addition and people eat too much, the studies are all designed around that concept. And until we take a more biological, what's called endocrinological approach, endocrinology is the science of hormones, and God knows it stuns me that for a century we've ignored, on a very fundamental level, the role of hormones in the regulation of fat accumulation.
Mm-hmm.
But until we sort of undo that damage, the research is going to be done poorly.
With that in mind, I want to finish by taking a call from Mark. He's on the Lower East Side, and I think he wants to talk about a health condition he has. Mark, you're on WMYC with Gary Taubes. Go right ahead.
Great. It's a great conversation you're having there. Yeah, I started out wanting to tell you that I inherited type 2 diabetes from my mother's side of the family. I've never had a problem with overweight. I've been very active my whole life, and yet here it is. I turned 60 years old, and I went to the doctor, and I got a really high A1C. And I was determined to try to deal with it in its early stages. So I opted to do diet and exercise as my means of moderating the skews in the blood sugar. But I also started doing a lot of research on diabetes. And one of the really interesting things I found out was that people who make white sugar is only white because it's been bleached, and it gets bleached with caustic sodas like lye and strong hydroxides, and it causes so many health issues to the people who are making it. No one ever talks about that because it happens in some other place, you know. And I think people ought to be aware that there's a health cost for the producer as well as for the consumer.
Mark, it sounds like you could write your own book based on your experiences. Gary Taubes, do you have a final thought for Mark and for our listeners? It sounds as though Mark's experiences dovetails precisely with your book.
To some extent, yes. We don't know.
It's generational. And the research, the scientific research has not been done to benefit people like Mark.
And that's clearly the case. And so I think if there's a message, if you're diagnosed with diabetes, for instance, and I'm not a doctor, so I'm not allowed to give medical advice on air or not, but when you go to your doctor will give you a diet that's rich in carbohydrates, so advise you to exercise. They'll talk about, hopefully preventing the need for drug therapy, but the drug therapy is a very easy thing to do. And the counterargument that I've been making and a lot of physicians have embraced is that the carbohydrates, again, and particularly the sugar, refined grains, are the problem, and that this is a disorder that can almost be reversed by giving up sugar, refined grains, and starches. And that's a very controversial way to think.
Mm-hmm.
And your doctor, unless he or she is enlightened, is probably going to bridle at that. So again, it's a difficult situation where you end up saying, am I going to get lucky with my doctor, or am I going to get unlucky because I don't know which side is right? Am I going to take medical advice from a journalist? That's crazy.
Well, you can always get educated, and you can start with The Case Against Sugar, right? And that is by our guest, science writer Gary Taubes. Thank you so much, Gary.
Okay, thank you.
And we're going to come back to you with the other new books you can look forward to in the new year. Stick with me. I'm Jamie Floyd, sitting in for Brian Lehrer.